which is being the people of the dream. And this is the last chapter that was written by the presiding bishop, by Michael Curry. After this, we get kind of subject matter experts who write the chapters. But remember, the first chapter was about, okay, so what is it to follow Jesus? The second chapter was, so what does a life following Jesus look like? And this third one is, so what does a community that follows Jesus look like? And as I was reading it, I pulled out kind of three main points. And then we can talk about what you pulled out of it. But the three main points I pulled out of it is that to be a community that follows Jesus, the first piece is about unity, about being one. And if you read the Gospels, the night before he dies, particularly if you read John's Gospel, the night before he dies, Jesus is praying, right? And he's praying to God. It's called the high priestly prayer because it's Jesus praying on behalf of his disciples, right? And by extension, all of us. And so Jesus is asking God right before he dies. So this is kind of really important. What he wants for his people. And he doesn't ask that we as his people be holy. He doesn't ask that we be righteous. He doesn't ask that we be safe. He doesn't even ask that we be faithful. What he asks is that we be one. So, and what Jesus prays is, let them be one, Father, as you and I are one. So he wants us to be united, to be together, which is why we talk a lot about the divisions in Christianity grieving God. Because Jesus' most fervent prayer for us was that we be one. Bracket that for a minute. It's because that is in tension with the promises that we make at baptism to seek and serve Christ in all persons, loving our neighbor as ourselves, to strive for justice and peace among all people, and respect the dignity of every human being. Right? So this be united, but also stand up for those who are oppressed, seek justice, seek righteousness. So I'll give it a really personal spin for me. So one of the things that keeps us separated from the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church is the position of women in those churches, right? We can't be one with the Roman Catholics because they wouldn't acknowledge the ministry of ordained women, and we think that that is a really important part of seeking and serving Christ in all persons, loving our neighbor as ourself, striving for justice and peace, and respecting the dignity of every human being. So those two places, unity and seeing the presence of Christ in all, respecting the dignity of every human being, are often in conflict because there kind of reaches a point where we can't be united because we really believe that we're doing harm to people made in the image of God, right? Now, the Catholics would say the same thing for us, that they can't be united with us because we are delusional about the place of women in the church, and that by accepting that, we're doing harm both to the women who think they're priests and to the people who are following their lead. So it's not just, you know, it's not just one-sided. But that's where the divisions come from often, is we can't go where you're going, but, you know, but it's also why the answer to we're having a fight in the church isn't storm away mad, right? The answer is do the best you can as long as you can, and then, and I'm not talking about a particular congregation, but about the church kind of writ large. So, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And then the last piece, so that seek and serve Christ in others, love your neighbor as yourself, is the second piece. The third piece is what the presiding bishop calls in this chapter the dream of God, that our role as the church, capital C, as corporate followers of Jesus, is to bring as much as we can on earth the world that God dreams. And how do we know what God dreams? Well, we find it in the scripture, right? We read about that. But that our job is to make our world on earth as close to the world that God dreams for us as we can. And when we say the Lord's Prayer, say, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, right? We pray for that every Sunday. And any time we say the Lord's Prayer, on earth as it is in heaven. So we want God's kingdom here. And that's what the dream of God is all about. The presiding bishop and a lot of others are trying to move away from kingdom language, because while it made a lot of sense at the time of Jesus and when you were under the reign of kings, it carries connotations for us that aren't particularly helpful. Because we no longer accept, even nations who have kings, don't really see themselves as a kingdom where the king is, you know, absolute authority. So he talks more about the dream of God, the world that God dreams. But it's the same concept.
Okay. I think the concept of family instead mm-hmm. of kingdom mm-hmm. Is used a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that is more meaningful to me, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Be the brothers and sisters and, mm-hmm. and so forth of God, mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, and mm-hmm. each other.
Mm-hmm. That's one that has gotten picked up a lot, is the church is the family of God. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, that's really meaningful. For a lot of people for whom their families of origin are difficult, it's a difficult
yeah.
mm-hmm. concept. So what we try to do is use all of them.
Yes.
And not just stick to one image.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Just like the trial liturgy we used right before Lent at the 10 o'clock. We were trying to use other images of God rather than he, the pronoun he all the time, and also Lord and, you know, mm-hmm. trying to get away from the masculine, solely masculine images. Not that we're doing away with mm-hmm. Father and Lord and he, but trying to add other things in as well. Mm-hmm. Because God actually is not a man.
So. I've always thought I put he in the context of a symbol. Mm-hmm. I've always just thought of it as a symbol, not mm-hmm. any other way.
Yes, but not everybody does. Mm-hmm. A lot of people hear he, and especially these days, about 20 years ago, the academic writing shifted from he and him and men as a stand-in for all humanity.
Yes, yes.
To, if you write men, you better mean a group of all male people. So we're caught kind of in that transition, mm-hmm. and so we're kind of experimenting with how do we in the words in our worship reflect the breadth of the understanding of who God is. Mm-hmm. While maintaining the historic things that are important to us, baptizing in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, you know, praying to, you know, our Father who art in heaven, keeping those pieces, but in other places, adding in. So, and I don't think we found it yet, but that's why we're experimenting. So, but it's, you know.
In some ways, if you're going to choose, say, between mm-hmm. Father and Mother, I think mm-hmm. Father's a better choice. Mm-hmm. The connotation is more powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. the male Father is usually subconsciously thought of as being a stronger person mm-hmm. than the Mother. Her Mother is very loving and mm-hmm. kind, and mm-hmm. she's there for you, and, mm-hmm. you know.
No, there are certain concepts which mm-hmm. should remain traditional, mm-hmm. and then that translates into a rock. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some things should not change.
Yes, and the question is, what are those things that should not change?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, where we are in the discussion right now is baptizing in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit is something that all Christians do. So that's something we need to keep. The wording of the Lord's Prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, is something.
It's in the Bible, but you can't change it, right?
Well, except that the word in Greek that gets translated as Father doesn't actually, it's capable of other translations than male parent. Mm-hmm. And of course, Jesus didn't speak English. Mm-hmm. So everything we have is a translation. But are there some ways that we can talk about, and you can't get around the fact that Jesus actually was physically a male human being. Mm-hmm. So Jesus was a he. But are there some ways we can talk about God in ways that don't use the male pronoun?
Well, in some ways, God shouldn't be generic. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the problem. In English, we don't have a neutral personal pronoun. We have it, but that's not a personal pronoun.
Unlike German.
Unlike German, that has a neuter personal pronoun. A gender neutral pronoun, but that refers to an animate object as opposed to an inanimate object. So part of the problem is, and Greek also has a gender neutral personal pronoun. The issue is getting it into English, where we don't have a gender-neutral first-person pronoun, although in modern English, they is becoming mm-hmm. a gender-neutral first-person pronoun.
And for singular, it's plural.
Mm-hmm. It's plural. It is plural, but it's becoming more and more used as a singular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Someone left their coat, for example.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is becoming really common. So as you know, language isn't a finite thing. It moves. Mm-hmm. And so what we're struggling with is, okay, language isn't a finite thing. It moves. So words that meant one thing no longer mean that thing. How do we get to where that is? That was a digression from where I was going. let me stop there with the concepts of unity, seek and serve Christ God in others, and the dream of God. What kind of reflections did you have on those concepts? For us is? What do you think it is that God dreams?
The other mom.
Okay.
It's just what our difference is. You expect mm-hmm. the other's religion, you don't have to believe it, but mm-hmm. and you should talk and communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. That's my view of it.
And probably the key word, love, which was in the previous chapter, mm-hmm. I mean, the love mm-hmm. between God, the people, and mm-hmm. between the people. And I think that's critical element.
Help each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think we're all praying to the same God, actually.
We don't think it makes any difference.
We just do it differently. Right? The Buddhists don't have a God, though, right?
It depends on the flavor of Buddhism.
Okay.
Some Buddhists have, we're talking about world religions in Bible study. And we talked about Buddhism last Wednesday. Some denominations, which is not quite the right word, but gets the concept across, mm-hmm. of Buddhism have the sense of a divine that you can have a relationship with, but most of them don't. Most of them have a sense of if there is a divinity outside yourself. They all have a sense that each person has a divine spark within them. And some of them have the sense of there is an overarching divine, but not really a God that you can have a personal relationship with. So the idea of a God that one can be in relationship with is really, not exclusively, but predominantly within the three Abrahamic faiths. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are the kind of places we find that most strongly. But I think, you know, I think one of the things we discover as we study other religions is how many concepts there are that overlap, and how much of our sense of who God is and what it means to follow the right path, how similar that is.
So Bible class is very interesting. You should all come.
Or listen to it on podcast.
Well, it kind of all boils down to a supreme being, if I can put a label like that on it.
Yes and no. Not every religion has a sense of a supreme being, but most religions have a sense that we are all connected, and that there is a right way to behave to one another and a wrong way, and that most of those paths are similar.
Well, then that brings up a word that has become popular in many areas today, which is community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we talk about our community, right? And what it means to be a community, and what we want to see in a community. And community can be geographic, but we also now talk about online communities, that there are lots of different digital communities that are not particularly geographic or even of people who've actually met.
Mm-hmm. But share a common interest
yes.
of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So who is our community?
Could be the good or bad.
Yeah. So who is our community? Is our community people who live around us?
I think we all have several.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like, for example, this church congregation mm-hmm. being one important mm-hmm. one, and then you have other communities, depending mm-hmm. on your bowler, you know, you mm-hmm. might have a bowling room, maybe mm-hmm. it's your another community, and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Getting back to key elements of the mm-hmm. dream, how yeah. about being the steward of the environment, mm-hmm. earth, mm-hmm. that God created?
Mm-hmm. Well, a steward is a good word, mm-hmm. because...
Stewardship? I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
to take care of,
yes.
is what I meant.
Yeah. Any community need a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, say there are these people with life and interest. Well, somebody has to organize it and mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I was just bringing up is we need to take care of this earth of ours, land, mm-hmm. water, sea, air, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. There's a common ground right there.
We are, well, then that brings to mind a word, responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, each one of us
yes.
needs
yes.
to be responsible.
But you're also right. We need leadership and leaders who
yes.
guide us in that direction, right?
Exactly. Like this new movement to get rid of, to make use of plastic bags mm-hmm. is wonderful. It's a state, mm-hmm. is it state law, it's mm-hmm. federal. I forgot now. I heard it on the news.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, you know, the idea of, oh wait, look around us, what have we done?
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that is to be careful. You know, one of the big movements right now is to ban plastic straws,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a good idea until you're a handicapped person mm-hmm. who needs them to mm-hmm. be able to drink. So... you know, do we completely ban them?
Well, they have paper, but they
yes,
don't last.
They don't last, and they're hard to use. And they have silver ones, but you have to clean them and
oh, yeah.
carry them with you, and so...
So you need disposable ones with,
right.
for that purpose.
Yeah. Yes. So you know, where's the... In our community,
mm-hmm.
how do we balance stewardship of creation, mm-hmm. which we're all responsible for, with caring for people with special needs
mm-hmm.
and accommodating that with and respecting the dignity, right,
mm-hmm.
of people who, with, you know, how do we keep it all in balance? And that's always the question, isn't it? How do we keep it all in balance? I like the last discussion question for this chapter on page 30. Where do you see the deepest divisions in your community? Around race, gender, economic class, age, faith? Where are the divisions? Let's talk about Western New York.
All right.
That's a good way to define community. Where are the principal divisions, the deepest divisions in?
I have to be honest, I am proud of what Western New York in comparison to the country, I'll just say the country. And that's why we're known as the City of Good Neighbors. And if you have been around here for a long time, like I have, it's just we've all grown up with that, if I want to call it ideology, that concept of just helping our neighbors. And
We are known as the City of Good Neighbors. We're also the fourth most segregated metropolitan area in the country now. Mm-hmm.
Well, but we're also certainly working on that, and we have always worked on it in regards to, I don't have the numbers, I bet if Linda was here, she might know, even though she's new in the area, of bringing in refugees.
We do a lot with refugees.
We've done a lot, and I think
for generations,
we may be segregated.
Yes.
I don't know about that statistic.
I think the inner city black area needs help.
Well, and we don't have laws that say black people can't live in Clarence, we don't have laws that say black people can't live in Clarence. We have laws in Clarence that say you can't build a new home on less than an acre of land. So we are.
This has always been farm country.
But we are economically segregated because you can't move out here if you don't have.
If you want to put it in that perspective.
Yeah, I do, because we want to talk about divisions. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really easy to look around and say, we do this really well. And we don't have the explicit rules, but Evans Bank right up the road is still under federal investigation for redlining. That is not loaning. Redlining is... We won't loan to black people who want to live in these neighborhoods.
Well, but they're now, they're a bit. That happened on the east side many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. Long time ago.
Well, and it's happening in Clarence today. That Evans Bank is one of the things they're being sued for, is not loaning to black families who wanted to live in Clarence. About 2 years ago. So it's not...
But why? Why would you give someone money if their history or their background is something that they would be unable to pay it back?
But that's not... The point is, these are people who weren't able to pay it back. The only reason they wouldn't loan to them, they qualified for the loan, but because they were black, they wouldn't loan to them.
Oh, well...
Yes.
That's a different story.
Yes. So, you know, these things... happen here too, and so we need to kind of talk about why. You know, why is it that Clarence and Grand Island and Williamsville and Amherst are 95% white and the east side of Buffalo is 90% people of color?
Well, I think there's more than one reason.
But a good question, too, is just what can we do
right.
to solve the problem in the inner city? I mean, the whole area around, Broadway Market and so forth, they look like they've been devastated.
Yeah.
You know, like a war was fought there and everything's boarded up and, no stores there. I mean, once, it's just terrible, what can we do to make that a vibrant, community that can,
Yes. Yeah, what do we do to
what do we do about it? I don't know.
I know the Broadway Market gets them once a year, maybe twice. I've never been to Broadway. Oh, I didn't remember.
But most of us go on Easter.
It's a fun place. You have to buy the butter chicken.
I need
to be in
that grocery store.
I can have butter in that
when I was working. That was, you know, teach people about, you know, how they need to eat for their medical diet, and, you know, the stores in those communities, they're like corner stores.
Right. And look at now, Tops is moving out, closing the store in that borderline area.
Yeah. Not profitable.
Yeah. But what does that tell you? There is something going on. They are a business and they do have to show a profit. And when you look at the real estate transactions in the paper, many homes are being sold. And you can tell how people are migrating and how neighborhoods are changing. If they're selling a home, let's say for $10,000, $20,000, first of all, what does that tell you? The condition of the property?
That's what I would think. Where is it? Is it still
right,
standing?
Right. It's very simple to find out what's going on. But these things do not happen overnight. I mean, many years ago, they were thriving, vibrant.
But we need to bring them back again.
We need to bring them back.
What can we do to bring them back? So, they were healthy again.
Right. But it won't happen overnight.
No,
and
but
unfortunately,
is it happening at all?
And so there are two conversations then. You know, what do we do long term?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To make our whole community, mm-hmm. but then what do we do for the people who are trapped?
Yes,
you know, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things we talk about. I spend a lot of time working on the Say Yes to Education group and all of that, and we've spent a lot of time with School 6. Mm-hmm. And of course, the goal is to make all the Buffalo public schools better long term. You know, for all students, mm-hmm. but each kid only has 1 year in kindergarten. Each kid only has 1 year in first grade. So what do we do for the kids who are in first grade now, who are, you know, and I'm in actually in a first grade class across the street and in a first grade and a kindergarten class at School 6. The kindergarten class at School 6 has, we have 20 kids in that kindergarten class, 10 of whom English is not their first language. And the kindergarten teacher she has some pushing help during the day, but not a lot and not all the time. It's basically her with 20 kids. The first grade class across the street is 16 kids, which is a huge difference at that age. All the kids are native English speakers. All the kids come from homes where they had books in their homes, and she has a full-time aide and lots of pushing help. Mm-hmm. So these kids are not getting an equivalent education, right? The kids across the street at Harris Hill are not getting an equivalent education of the kids at School 6. Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why they don't do as well. Mm-hmm. And actually the taxes here are lower than the taxes in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Because Clarence has historically low taxes, but you know, when we talk about the systems that keep one group of people, that preference one group of people over another, there it is, mm-hmm. right?
The education system.
The education system is one of them. The law enforcement system is one of them. The transportation system is one of them. If you have a car in Buffalo, you can get pretty much anywhere you want. If you don't have a car in Buffalo, our transportation system is pretty abysmal. If you're stuck riding a bus, it's really very difficult to get from one place to another. So you were going to say something, and I need to go.
Yeah. So I think I heard something on the news recently about statewide. There's a movement with promos pushing to equalize the financial support to schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because right now it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, the schools in Buffalo don't get as much tax dollars as the schools in the suburbs, and they're trying to straighten that out. And I think that's a big element, mm-hmm. an element of the problem also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In most states, schools are funded by local property taxes. Mm-hmm. Right? So Clarence property taxes go to Clarence schools, Amherst property taxes go to Amherst schools, Buffalo property taxes go to Buffalo schools. Most states fund their schools that way. Most state Supreme Courts has found that method of funding schools to be unconstitutional because they have inequitable outcomes. But most state legislatures, including New York's, have not done anything much about it because that's really a political tar pit nobody wants to put their feet into.
But is that something they're doing in New York State, or did I hear wrong on that?
The governor's working on it, but he's got to get it through the legislature, and that's may or may not happen.
Okay.
But this is what the presiding bishop in this chapter is calling us to look at. To look deeper than the surface, mm-hmm. and to really look at our communities, mm-hmm. and see where the dream of God might be different than the world our community lives in. And those of you who heard my sermon at 8 o'clock, is it something that God's speaking to us, particularly out of the burning bush, to go and talk to Pharaoh about? So I'm going to leave you with that, and we'll talk about evangelism next.